In his poem, Invictus, Latin for unconquered, William Ernest Henley famously proclaimed, "I am the master of my fate. I am the captain of my soul." This is Dr. Jim Tonkowicz, your host for these After Dinner Scholar podcasts from Wyoming Catholic College. Henley's sentiment expresses well the spirit of the age in which we live, now more than 125 years after he penned those words. Our culture feeds our desire for autonomy and individualism. The rugged individual who blazes his or her own trail, needing and depending only on what Henley called my unconquerable soul, is today's iconic cultural hero. Yet part of us can't be fooled. In the 1942 film Casablanca, ironically, just after Captain Renault quotes Henley's lines in a boast about his power in the city, he is ordered to see Major Strasser of the Gestapo. He obeys immediately. So much for radical autonomy and independence. In his book, Dependent Rational Animal, Why Human Beings Need the Virtues, philosopher Alastair MacIntyre takes aim at the kind of wishful human autonomy expressed in Henley's poem. Wyoming Catholic College academic dean Dr. Thaddeus Kaczynski has been reading MacIntyre with our juniors, and is our guest this week on the After Dinner Scholar. Dr. Kaczynski, why did you choose Dependent Rational Animal as part of the ethics course you teach?
So to answer that, just give a little background on our philosophy curriculum. It's grounded in the philosophy of Aristotle, for the most part, and St. Thomas Aquinas. We teach the perennial philosophy, which is the traditional Catholic philosophical grounding. And we read primarily Aristotle in almost all the courses. We have a course in logic and physics, in a philosophy of man or anthropology, the soul, philosophy of soul, and politics as well, and metaphysics. And all these courses, primarily the main author is Aristotle, with some commentary on Aristotle by St. Thomas and some of St. Thomas's philosophical thinking that's found in his theological works. But it's not all that we do in the philosophy curriculum. We want them to have a grounding in the tradition, in the philosophy of Perennis, but we also want them to understand the contemporary world, the development of philosophy, the history of philosophical ideas that developed since pagan times, through medieval times, Renaissance, modernity, and even postmodernity, which we focus on in the metaphysics course senior year. MacIntyre is one of the, if not the preeminent Aristotelian thinkers of our time. He is worth studying even in a traditional liberal arts program and not just in graduate school. This particular work is his attempt to take Aristotle's ethics and political thinking and in a way develop it in light of contemporary study in biology and anthropology and make it relevant, to make the Aristotelian mode of ethical inquiry, as well as his overall project of virtue ethics, relevant and a kind of competitor in the marketplace of ideas. And I think students, in order to go out into the world and lead, need to both understand their own tradition and how to think correctly according to true ethical principles and conclusions, but they also need to see how to negotiate this in modern culture, modern politics, and the modern intellectual milieu. And MacIntyre is a very good, perhaps the best model for such work, intellectual work in our day.
He begins the book by saying, "We humans are vulnerable to many kinds of afflictions, and most of us are at some time afflicted by serious ills." Then he goes on to say, "Not that we save ourselves in some rugged individual way, but rather, quote, it is often to others that we owe our survival, let alone our flourishing." On the one hand, that sounds obvious. On the other hand, since the very first paragraph of the book, I get the sense that he's picking a fight with somebody. Why does he begin his book with talking about vulnerability, and what is the fight he's trying to pick?
Yeah, MacIntyre himself says when you study modern ethical philosophy in John Locke and Rousseau, Immanuel Kant, David Hume, Hobbes, Adam Smith, he uses as a primary bête noire, actually. You get the sense that ethics is made for the fully able, fully intelligent, adult, rational animal, or not even rational animal, but just rational being. with a de-emphasis on our animal nature. We are, at best, sovereign, independent agents who can freely choose our way in life and make it on our own. If we choose to engage in community and if we choose to sort of make contracts with others, it's really to better enable us to attain goods that are basically private goods that enable us to flourish in the way that we see fit. So at best, communal participation is a kind of freely chosen bargain contractual arrangement, not something that's essential to our flourishing. And McIntyre has an issue with this neglect of looking at the very truth, the very obvious truth that we are potentially disabled, we are sick, we are ill, we are in positions of vulnerability throughout our lives. And ethics needs to not only address this, but understand it as a kind of essential aspect of what it means to be human.
And he does that, oddly enough, not by turning to the human, but by turning to the animal. And he talks about how, like animals, we have material bodies, an animal nature, and share a great deal with intelligent animals, such as dogs or dolphins or chimpanzees. Tell us about our animality and how that's critical to his argument. Where's he going with that?
Yeah, I think he thinks the cast of mind of a lot of or most modern philosophy is to think of us as primarily rational and to see that our animal aspects as liabilities at best and at worst things we have to transcend. You know, the autonomous rational agent is kind of the ideal of the modern Enlightenment person, and maybe even in the postmodern world as well. But McIntyre thinks that we have really neglected to look at the kinship we have with animals, even in our rationality. And by what he does is he goes through different higher level animals like dolphins, gorillas, and especially dolphins, actually. That's his favorite example. And he uses latest research on dolphins. And he basically argues that dolphins are not merely animals moved by instinct, unthinking responses to their environment that are kind of homogeneous and simplistic and easily understandable just in terms of action-reaction. In fact, he even argues that dolphins have kind of reasons for what they do. They have beliefs. They make judgments. They react to certain stimuli and have perceptions that they learn from and thereby act differently in the same set of situations. And that's just one thing he argues. He spends a lot of time talking about their dependence on other dolphins and how they learn from them. And he says humans have these same kind of operations going on. We have what he calls pre-linguistic, pre-rational beliefs and reasons for what we do. Of course, the main difference is, and this is where he's firmly in the traditional philosophy, is that we have the ability to reflect upon these reasons and beliefs, to put them into language and conceptual structure so that we can learn from them in a way that animals cannot. And this is really what it means to be rational. But he wants to emphasize how much we depend on these pre-linguistic reasons and beliefs, which animals indeed do have.
Oh, including the pre-linguistic belief that we are part of a group and that we need each other. And from there, he goes to argue that we need virtues.
Yeah, and he has a phrase where he says, on the one hand, he says, the purpose of ethics, the purpose of becoming virtuous, of learning how to deliberate, to be in community, to seek our end of human flourishing, we want to become what he calls independent practical inquirers. What he means by that is the ability to be in any situation, to kind of sort of size the situation up, to see what should be done in any situation to accomplish the ends that are both internal to the community you're in, the goods that are there to secure, skills, goods, virtues, and from there acquire one's happiness, one's flourishing. So we need to be able to think for ourselves and execute the virtue of prudence. We have to do things like be just, generous, and the cardinal virtues, courageous, and we have to have temperance. And we need these skills in order to negotiate a situation, to have the right end in our minds, and then to be able to deliberate as to the best means to achieve the end in any situation, both as a particular member of a certain practice. He likes to bring up the idea of a fishing crew or in a string quartet, and also as a member of the human race, the human species. But on the other hand, he says we also have to learn what he calls the virtues of acknowledged dependence. So we have the virtue of being an independent practical reasoner or inquirer, and then we have the virtues of becoming a dependent person or acknowledging our dependence. And that means we have to know how to receive as well as give. It's one of the reasons why he critiques Aristotle's kind of pagan saint, the magnanimous man, who loves to give and be seen as being someone who gives and gives much, but doesn't like to receive, because this is a sign of weakness and lack of independence. And McIntyre doesn't think this is quite right, this depiction.
Well, it seems like anytime you and I get together for one of these podcasts, Friedrich Nietzsche shows up and gets to be part of the discussion. And at the end of the book, we meet Friedrich Nietzsche again. The pervasiveness of Nietzsche's thought seems to be in McIntyre's mind as he writes. I mean, is that the case? And how does this essay address all the would-be autonomous, independent Ubermenschen among us?
The common theme of this Aristotle versus Nietzsche kind of, it appears in After Virtue towards the end, his 1981 work. It appears in Three Rival Versions of Moral Inquiry, and now here it is again. I mean, the main thing to be said about this is between an Aristotelian, one who sees that goodness is real, that it exists as part of human nature, as our telos, our end, and that there are certain virtues that we need to achieve and practice in order to achieve our good. The good is not something we create, that we sort of invent, that's different for every individual. It's certainly not the will to power. Especially in this book, you see McIntyre saying it's more like the will to weakness. It's an understanding our common weakness and vulnerability and community that we can really work together and cooperate to achieve the good of human beings. But for Nietzsche, this kind of acknowledgement of weakness, this kind of acceptance of objective moral standards, this is really the defect of human beings. This is a disease, kind of a leftover of Platonic and Christian slave morality. And for McIntyre, there really isn't any arguing with the Nietzschean. He has left the whole world of argument and rational adjudication of different ethical theories. I think the Nietzschean is just always this kind of boogeyman there in McIntyre, and he's not really presenting his book for the Nietzschean. Maybe for the Nietzschean who has seen the insufficiency of his thought, incoherence, or is converting away from Nietzscheanism. I think McIntyre's project can show a viable alternative. But, you know, between the Nietzschean and the Aristotelian, there's this unbridgeable abyss, and that just must be. More on that in McIntyre's trilogy, especially his third book, Three Rival Versions. He calls the Nietzschean view the genealogical view, and it's really the undermining of all possibility of rational inquiry about the good. It's the furthest you can get from the Aristotelian position. And I think for McIntyre, the way that and this is the last chapters of his book, the way our political system is set up, the nation state is, and this rubs conservatives the wrong way. I mean, even in the best iteration of this, you might say in the traditional American constitutionalism, there's a lurking Nietzscheanism in the background in the liberal project, insofar as it's based on a rejection of the Aristotelian polis and the rejection of the ability for reason to know man's end. Liberalism, in its more ideological form, makes this sort of good private. And one of McIntyre's lectures is called The Privatization of the Good. And this is really a kind of Nietzschean move, when the good becomes a sort of subjective, private project of self-creation.
Well, timely book, and Thank you for teaching it to our students.
Okay, thank you.
McIntyre's book presents a serious challenge to our individualism, our selfishness, our autonomy, and our preoccupation with feelings over reason. In order to flourish, he writes, we need both those virtues that enable us to function as independent and accountable practical reasoners, and those virtues that enable us to acknowledge the nature and extent of our dependence on others. This conclusion is, to say the least, countercultural, and given the current state of Western culture, that's a very good thing indeed. Our hope, in fact, is that the after-dinner scholar feeds the countercultural in you and helps you to develop a distinctly Christian understanding of all of life. And since that happens in community, we encourage you to share the after-dinner scholar with others. For Wyoming Catholic College, this is Dr. Jim Tonkowicz.